It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. We've had 2 days of Test cricket at Hobart, Ashes Test cricket. It's a bit like watching cricket in England, with low scores, the ball seeming all over the place, and actually in a weird sort of way, although England's batting today was pretty lamentable, Simon, they took three quick wickets in the evening. Actually, they've got an outside chance of victory. Or am I just being totally deluded?
Don't you start, Yoz. Have you not been watching since the 8th of December? England, chance of victory. There's more chance of me flying home without an aeroplane on Wednesday than England winning this test match. Wouldn't you say? I mean, they're already 152 runs behind. Australia got 7 wickets in hand. England haven't managed to score 300 in one innings in this test series. There's a chance they'll be chasing something like 300. Depends how Australia apply themselves. Still got Steve Smith to dislodge. I know it seems a long shot. If they were to bowl them out for 100, say, tomorrow, come back and bowl them out for 100, yeah, possibly, yeah. But it's going to need something really special with the ball first. They've still got to take 7 Australian wickets. And, you know, Australia have shown in every test match so far that, you know, even when England sort of dragged them back, that they get away again. And I imagine that is what is going to happen on the third day.
Do you know, a little microcosm of the two teams, the performances of, with the bat, this is, Scott Boland and Stuart Broad. Mm. And I don't want to, you know, Stuart Broad's bowled manfully, and the way he got David Warner out today just underlined the futility, the insanity of him not playing in that first test. You realise he's only played one test when the Ashes were still alive in this series, the second test, and never played in that first test where he had that psychological hold. I think he's bowled something like 190 balls at David Warner in the last 4 years and got him out about 12 times for an average of 7. And, you know, infuriating. But anyway, I'm just going to talk about batting for a moment. Broad came in. England's innings was obviously wilting away. But actually, it was funny, listening to David Gower and Mark Taylor on commentary, they were sort of expecting Broad to get out any ball. And in fact, even the cameraman was expecting Broad to get out every ball, because the cameraman at deep cover just focused on the stumps. He didn't film the play at all. He just sat very tight on those zing bales, expecting them to explode off the top of the stumps at any moment. And it only took 4 balls. And Broad was, I don't know if he was trying to keep his feet out of the way of Mitchell Starc or what, but he was basically giving him a free rein at the stump, free aim at the stumps, and dragged one on from outside off, 4th ball, bowled onto his stumps. Now, Broad, you know, I know he's had issues, sort of hit in the face, and it's a horrible experience. But he did have, you know, some really a real ability with the bat. And we you know, 160 against Pakistan. I know it's a long time ago, but he definitely had ability. He can see the ball. Scott Boland, not a very good batsman, a tail ender. He survived to the end tonight. He was hit twice on the gloves, pretty painfully. Every ball that Mark Wood bowled was at the same speed as Stark and going for the ribs, that horrible area where tail enders really hate. And he stuck it out and he then defended the good balls and stayed in. And actually, you know, he was there for, what, nearly 20 minutes as night watchman, which is a very long time for a night watchman to bat. He just played every ball on its merits. You know, he didn't get flustered by being hit in the ribs or hit on the gloves a couple of times. And England could have taken, if England had got him out, then they would have had Travis Head and then they would have had Cameron Green to have a go at before the end of play. They could have got another two or three wickets. So, you know, that commitment and sort of dedication and just putting your psychological fears aside just for the sake of a few minutes of defiance was a really impressive performance. Mm.
Scott Boland will learn, though, Yoz. He'll learn. When he's played 150 yeah. test matches, well, A, you'll learn not to be night watchman, and B, you'll learn to have a swing, get out, rather than face someone with a pink ball at, you know, 140 kilometres an hour, as Stuart Broad was facing against Mitchell Starc. But it was a bit like watching, I don't know, festival cricket. Did you ever play in Scarborough, the festival at Scarborough?
I've got a terrible story to tell you about festival cricket. You know,
okay. I don't mean yours.
I'll tell you in the second half if you like.
Okay. Well, yeah. Hang on for that. Let's not forget that. I don't mean sort of like in a festival championship match. You know, sometimes you used to play the Tilcon Trophy or something like that. I don't know. Teams used to be invited up to play. I think it was in Scarborough, Harrogate, or somewhere. You know, and it was. I mean, it didn't really mean very much, did it? It was some sort of local sponsor. Got involved, one of those supermarkets or something, and you, a few of you went up there and persuaded to play. I don't know what you got out of it. Well, you might be able to tell us in the second half of the podcast. But it was didn't it feel a bit like that today? I had a sort of end of term feeling about it. Almost both sides, in a way. The way Australia batted this morning, it was almost like a shot a ball. Carey was trying to play a few shots, and of course Lyon was able to play a few shots, and he did to Mark Wood what Mark Wood did to Cummins. There's no respect these days, is there? I know the fast bowlers are steaming in and trying to knock you over, and they hit you on the glove and they crush your toes and all that sort of stuff, but some of those tail enders don't have to give it back to the quick bowlers, and Lyon did that to Wood today.
Yeah, I mean, you know, tail enders practice more than they used to, don't they? And they get fed a lot of bouncers. And actually, what's quite good is you can get those sort of incredibles now fed into a bowling machine or with the dog thrower and face genuine bouncers without getting hurt in the nets. And that's a very valuable sort of practice, because it really is all about reaction and confidence as well. And I suppose with someone like Mark Wood, you kind of know what you're going to get a little bit with Nathan Lyon knows you're going to get a lot of short balls. He can sit back on his stumps and wait for them. Whereas with someone like Pat Cummins, you're not so sure, are you? He's quite clever. He mixes up the bouncers a bit more and then pitches the odd one up as well, more than the odd one. So, but batsmen down the order have the opportunity to practice this sort of approach. And I think Nathan Lyon's right to do what he does, because actually he's got a good eye and he hits the ball a long way. And so does Mark Wood.
And they're expected to score runs these days, aren't they? I mean, it's no longer the 9-10 Jack and all, you know, the rabbits and the ferrets or whatever. You know, you're pretty much expected to score runs. And you're certainly expected to have two suits, i.e., batting and bowling, or batting and fielding, or bowling and fielding. And if you can have three suits as well, I think that's ideal in the modern game. And yeah, and why not as well? I mean, they're paid well, and you're right, because you can practice these days. You can in all sorts of different ways, and so you can improve your skills. And we've seen lots of sort of really poor batters down the order actually just improve that bit, and sometimes, you know, it's absolutely vital, isn't it? We saw it in the last game when Jimmy Anderson came out, you know, 39 years of age, admittedly wasn't facing Stark or Cummins, but he was able to just show a bit of composure. I actually watched that over again the other day. He did actually play it really well, that last over from Steve Smith, because the ball was just turning a little bit. There were so many men around the bat, there was a lot of pressure. But yeah, so it actually can really help your team. It isn't just about just having a swing and getting out these days. You know, people are absolutely right to to practice your batting, because it can save you a series, can't it? I mean, it did. 2009, it did save England the series, help them win a series when Panesar and Anderson blocked it out and drew that match in Cardiff. It wasn't particularly glorious in one way, because Australia totally dominated the game. But in the end, it said a big D at the end, didn't it? It didn't say Australia win, it's a draw. So there we go. Let's talk about England's batting, Yoz, today. When you used to play in the Championship towards the end of the season and you had nothing left to play for, was it a bit like that today? You know, where it was just harder to focus, harder to concentrate. You know you're coming to the end. Okay, you know it's a World Test Championship match. You know it's the Ashes. You know all the things you're supposed to think and say. But is it just a bit harder when you're coming towards the end?
Yeah, and I think it's a bit like... this is quite the right analogy, but you know when you go riding on a horse. Are you a horse rider? You probably
I have ridden a horse actually.
You know how you go for a ride on a horse and you've got sort of you've booked an hour, and you take it out for half an hour, and then you think, oh good, I've still got another half an hour to go, so I better turn round, and you turn round and it gallops back in 15 minutes. Yeah, so you're done out of your 15 minutes of your ride. And I think it's a bit like that when you're a team at the end of the season, you sort of almost just want to get it over with, and you don't have the same preparation, focus, ambition, unless, say, your contract is up for grabs. But actually, contracts are normally decided in July and August, so you probably know by then in September whether you're going to be re-engaged or not. I think it's just, if there's nothing to play for, and in this test match there isn't really, obviously there's places at stake and all that, but you sort of, because the Ashes are not live, the series is gone, I think you just try and get it over with as quickly as possible and get it into fast forward, and you're just thinking about home, you're thinking about next week, being back with the family, going down the pub with your mates, whatever. You know, you're just, I think you're mentally detached from it, and therefore sometimes that can help and free you up, but also it probably makes you make elementary errors as well.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel in this game, it is a bit, it's an end of tour feel, and runs have come quite quickly, haven't they? Lots of shots have been played. I mean, Australia the same as well. I mean, Travis Head came out and smashed it, and we talked about the Australians who came out and tried to whack it this morning, and there were a few shots played in the England innings as well. I mean, they were bowled out in 47.4 overs. Yeah. For 188. So the scoring rate was actually quite high today. So one of England's highest scoring rates of the series so far.
You're mentally tired as well. And actually, I remember, at the end of a season, you're kind of coasting along largely on adrenaline towards the end because you played so much cricket. And it's funny because you get to the end of the season and you literally, the day after, a couple of days after, you can't get out of bed. You're just so exhausted mentally and physically that just can't do anything for a few days. I remember feeling I couldn't even cross the road on September the 28th, 4 days after the end of the season, a couple of days after the end of the season. So, the mental torment, especially of the batsman and someone like Rory Burns being in the nets for hours, trying to kind of mould his technique a little bit, and the thought processes of staying awake at night, thinking, how am I going to overcome the issues that have cropped up this series, just they eat away at you.
And then he gets run out. I mean,
yeah,
it was sort of sod's law sort of day for Rory Burns. I mean, it was a, and that's what can happen actually when you've got a new opening partnership. You're not quite used to each other. I mean, there are openers who batted together a lot. You can almost, I don't know whether you've ever experienced this, but if you batted with someone a lot, sometimes you can just nod at them, or you almost offer them the single and they come. You have this sort of just sense of a real solidarity, yeah, with the person you're playing with. But Burns hasn't opened the batting with Crawley before because of the various combinations that England have used in the last few years. It was and there was a bit of hesitation from Crawley. You saw that Burns wasn't quite coming, and Burns initially stopped and then kept going. I mean, it was quite a big single there actually, if they'd just gone, and it actually showed in actual fact that even with a bit of hesitation they could have got home. Burns didn't dive. If a dive would have saved him, and I think that desperation to save your wicket, with some batters, it comes, I think, perhaps more naturally too. I don't know. I'm just trying to remember thinking about Rory Burns dive. He probably has dived to make his ground in previous. Perhaps he didn't see the. Perhaps he didn't sense the threat was so great. I suppose he's used to watching England throw the ball at the stumps and miss the whole time. Perhaps he didn't think the throw was going to hit the stumps. But you know, and it was it really was just a fraction. He was out. But of course, that's enough.
It's a very important position, that mid-off position, actually. And that's been brought home to me a little bit, because in one day cricket, Chris Jordan, quite often in T20, fields at mid-off. AB de Villiers used to field there for South Africa in short formats. And you can create runouts if you've got the sharpest field. It used to be the field where the place where the bowler relaxing after his over stood, or somebody who was a bit slow off the mark. But actually, mid-off now is a very important position. And Labuschagne was quick there. He was also quite tight. And I'm sure that Pat Cummins emphasises that early on. You know, get in tight. I don't want batsmen getting easy singles. So that was just very good opportunism. And again, sharp out cricket by Australia, which has very much decorated their performances all series.
The other thing it underlined to me as well, it made me think about this again, how many runouts weren't given out in the old days, but you know, before DRS came in, because it was such a tight call. That actually, it was a really good piece of camera work, because I was watching it on the television, and when I saw it with my naked eye, I was thinking, like, is that out or not out? And my reaction was not out. I thought Burns was home. And I'm sure there are lots of umpires over the years who've thought that exactly the same thing in a situation like this, because it all happens in a blur so quickly. It's sort of like an instinct, isn't it, you develop, whether it's out or not. And I actually thought not out. But as you see, it was just fractionally out. I'm sure there have been so many batters who've been reprieved over the time.
And probably batsmen, yeah, and also batsmen who've come in being given out, saying I was never out. You know, I bet you Burns probably thought he was safe there. Yeah. And it was just a couple of inches. You know, we both played in cricket matches where, you know, a batsman walks off going, how could that be out? You know, whether it was LBW or run out. And you're right, probably more were than they thought.
Yeah, I don't think I was ever LBW though in club cricket, ever. not once. Ollie Pope today, I know you tweeted about this. I mean, he's got this really good first-class record. You were talking the other day, actually, about players, you know, in the county game who've got, you know, significant averages. And Johnny Bairstow's got an average over 40. Josh Buchanan at Lancashire actually has got an average in the low 40s. I was looking at this today. Root, but also Pope, who averages 50 in first-class cricket. And he's got this great record at the Oval. And yet there's a sort of itchiness about his batting, isn't there? I mean, that dismissal today, it was a really poor piece of test cricket. He was looking perfectly nice at the crease, wasn't he? He looked balanced, played a couple of crisp shots. He just did not need to play at that ball. He could just let it go, a bit like Smith or Labuschagne or whoever has been doing, you know, pretty well for Australia in this series.
Yeah, I mean, I watched Ollie Pope bat a lot. In fact, I remember you and I were at an Oval match against Yorkshire early season, and he played really well there and got 100. And it was quite juicy conditions for bowling. And he had some good bowlers, the likes of, you know, Tim Bresnan and so on, bowling at him. I thought then, if there's one weakness he had, it was occasionally going for a fiddle outside off stump when he didn't need to. But the standard of bowling, obviously in county cricket, not quite as high, or not nearly as high as these Australians. And I think the other thing is, in that over in which he was out, he also played a loose drive, actually, early in the over against Scott Boland and played and missed. And I think it's also about conditions. It's also about what is the ball doing today. I'm playing against a pink ball. The surface is quite green. There's a little bit of bounce. He's getting the ball just to swing. So you've got to be more selective. You've got to have better judgment. That little run shot that he tried to play might be all right, you know, later in the innings, or, you know, on a flatter pitch somewhere like the Adelaide Oval or somewhere like that, you know, on a dry, sunny day. That might work. But it was a very, very poor piece of judgment in that situation where the bowler is obviously getting a bit of movement. It's lifting a little bit off a length. You know, there was slips, corners already. It wasn't going to get him any runs, or it might have got him one at the most. And you've just got to bide your time and read the situation. And that was the most disappointing part of it. You know, in future innings, he probably will get runs with that shot in the right conditions, but it was just, and I think also that the way he's set up now, where he's standing on off stump and sort of moving almost outside off stump. I mean, I know Steve Smith does that, but he's pretty unique. I think it causes batsmen more problems, and because suddenly, if you're changing your setup to standing on off stump, you're not sure what to leave anymore, I don't think, on what to play. And you're ending up playing at balls at sort of sixth and seventh stump outside off stump. Whereas if you stand in your normal stance, which he would always have done, you know, as a kid growing up and probably the last few years, standing on middle and legs, say, and moving across to middle and off, then that ball would not have been challenging for him to play. He wouldn't have wanted to play at that ball because it would have been that much wider. So I think it's flawed thinking to stand on off stump like that for him. It might work for somebody else, Steve Smith, who's done it all his career, but I don't think it works for Ollie Pope because it's making him play at balls he doesn't need to. Mm.
Davin Malan was brought into the England side at number three against India. He had to completely rejig their top order because of the problems that they've had. Australia gradually worn him down, haven't they? They've got on top of him in this series. You know, it can often happen in those long series. He made 25 today, but he was actually caught behind on 13 and Australia didn't review it. What do they do with Davin Malan? Is it? I mean, there's been, you know, there were a couple of decent scores, weren't there, at the start of the series? But the longer it's gone on, he's just not been able to control the whole thing, control that number three position.
He's very passive player, isn't he? And this was the thing that used to get certainly supporters annoyed about his T20 performance, that he comes in and he gets the runs and he gets his strike rate up in the end. But for the first few balls in a T20 game, he doesn't do much. He just stands there and sort of dabs it here and there. He doesn't have a sort of strong personality. And that can be great if you've lost an early wicket. He's got a reassuring presence because he doesn't seem to get flustered. But you also want a player who can sense the opportunity and the initiative and seize it too. And I feel like he's just someone who reacts rather than proacts, perhaps. And he's done okay. You know, it's a bit unfair to criticise him too heavily because he's one of the only players who's made a couple of decent scores. But I don't know. I just feel like it doesn't feel like it's proactive enough to me.
Yeah. I think he tried today, actually. I think there were signs that he tried to play one or two shots, but actually in the innings of 25, he was essentially out twice. But they only worked it out once. He was out. They didn't review the first one. He was caught down the leg side again for the second time in the series. But there was a sort of cavalier sort of approach from England today, 188 all out. I mean, Chris Wokes making 36, England's top score. He was dropped twice. And Australia had been making a few errors, but I think there are enough. You can create enough chances. A decent bowling attack on this pitch, you can create enough chances, can't you? You know, it is a, you know, if you create 14 chances or 15 chances or whatever it was, you know, that 10 of them will pretty go your way, you know, most of the time. Yeah. You know,
they're slip corners too close together. I think. Yeah. I mean, they're getting in each other's way. Kawaja dived right across in front of Smith and tried to take one, which was going straight into Smith's right mitt. So I don't think they've got that quite right, really. And Warner's sort of a 50% man. But their bowlers create so many chances, it doesn't matter, does it?
What about Sam Billings? I mean, I texted you while he was batting out there. I said, it almost looks as if he was the only England batter today enjoying it. I mean, is that no coincidence because he's sort of come in, it's his debut, he's exuberant. For him, it's new, it's fresh, it's exciting. And he actually played like that for a bit today as well.
Yeah, it's natural, isn't it? That he's nothing to lose. It was a complete unexpected opportunity. And he's that sort of personality anyway. He's an optimistic, sort of engaging character who seizes any opportunity he gets and loves cricket. You know, I remember sort of talking to him about his upbringing, and he's got this barn on his father's land, sort of, I think it's a farm, and he just used to play for hours with, I think, his brother, just experimenting with the game, batting right-handed and left-handed and trying all the different shots. And he's a sort of a cricket badger a little bit, really. And so what a wonderful opportunity. You know, he would totally never, entertain the idea of playing in an Ashes Test match or a Test match at all, really, even a few months ago, and suddenly to get this opportunity. And he's just a very enterprising batsman. I know people think of him as largely a one-day player coming in at 6 and 7, but he's opened for England in one-day cricket, in fact, and played pretty well. So he's got all the makings of being a very talented Test cricketer, actually. And he showed certainly some glimpses today. I thought he played the pace of Stark really well. And he recognised the opportunities to score and hit a couple of nice drives off Cummins. And, yeah, probably a little bit of a shame he got out. I mean, hooking on this pitch is a little bit dangerous because the ball is, you know, it's sort of coming off at different heights and a few people have been caught in the deep. But he was trying to play his natural game, and I think his natural game is a good one.
Yeah. All three of Mark Wood's wickets, for example, were off short balls. He got Cameron Green on the first day and he banked out two lower order players today, Stark and Cummins. So, yeah, so the short ball has worked quite well. And that was another short ball that Green bowled to Billings, and Boland on the fine leg boundary to the catch off the top edge. One thing I thought that was a bit of a bonus for England this evening was the fact that Ollie Robinson was able to bowl, because if you go into a second innings and you're already 100 runs behind and you've only got three main bowlers and Joe Root, I mean, gradually the opposition are going to wear you down. It might well be that Australia will wear England down in any case, but at least that just gives them a bit of control. You know, Joe Root hasn't got to be constantly scratching and scratching his head and, you know, asking some bowlers to do more than perhaps he would like them to do, especially at this stage of the tour. So, I mean, you know, in terms of, you know, what might happen on the third day and whether England still are in this game or not, the fact that, if you know, if presumably if Robinson comes back with and pulls up okay tomorrow morning, you know, they still got that potential for control on the third day with those four seamers on this pitch. I mean, how many do you think? It's a difficult question to answer, isn't it, after what we've seen in the last 2 months or whatever, 6 weeks. How many do you think England could chase successfully in the fourth innings of this match? What have they got to do to realistically give themselves an opportunity of winning the game?
They could chase 175.
Oh, right. Well, that means they've got to take the last seven wickets for about 25 then.
Yeah. Well, you know, between 175 and 200 they could chase. I think any more is unlikely. Because it's just, and the Australian attack is so good. I mean, Boland is bowling. He's been immaculate. And of course, they've got Cameron Green as well, who's bringing it down from that fantastic height, getting the ball to nip around. He seems to kind of have quite a good understanding of the art of bowling as well. Obviously, they've got Cummins. They haven't even needed Nathan Lyon. So, I mean, there's such an excellent attack. I think 175... that is beyond England. But Robinson's, you know, having him back in the attack today just showed what they missed yesterday. And he was almost back up to his sort of fairly consistent pace. And I think, you know, actually Shane Warne picked this up last summer. You know, he said, if Ollie Robinson's going to have a decent Test career, he's got to get fitter. And that's been admitted by the England camp. And, you know, he's just got to be able to maintain and even extend his pace a little bit and his stamina.
Well, it's very clear what the England management think about his fitness, because, I mean, they've made it public, haven't they? And that's often a last resort. I mean, just, you know, what happens. So internally, you pass the message on. If it's not received, then it's sort of filtered out into the public. So everyone's sort of talking about it in a way, and you feel perhaps as a player, oh, yeah, right, well, the scrutiny is really on me now and I do need to get fit. So what we talk about getting fit. You know, he bowls his over. He's bowled four Test matches in this series. What are we talking about here in terms of getting fit? What do we mean by that?
Well, I think he needs to go running. Actually, he needs to do more actual running and just build up strength in his legs. Someone like Jimmy Anderson. I remember seeing a film actually of Jimmy running on the sands near Morecambe in Lancashire, and you just got to put in the work, and it's hard. I once, when Freddie Flintoff was getting fit after an ankle operation, I actually went and spent a day with him in the Lancashire Fells, and he was with Rooster Roberts, Dave Roberts, who was the England physio and sort of trainer at the time, and we actually went for a run in the Fells, and it was pretty hard. We probably ran for over an hour, but what we did was interval training. So you'd run for 5 minutes as if it was an over, and then you'd walk for 5 minutes as if it was, you know, you were at the, you know, slip, standing at slip or standing at mid off. Then you run again for 5 minutes, then walk for 5 minutes. And we did that for over an hour, up and down hills and, you know, quite sort of arduous countryside. But that's the kind of thing. And actually, if you do it like that, rather than just plodding around Hove, the ground, it's actually more, a bit more interesting as well. So whether where Ollie lives has any hills or anything, well, there are some hills. There's the South Downs in Sussex. I think he has to do some proper, you know, hill running, actually, and build some more strength up in his legs so that he can keep going in those long days in the field. And it's about, it's a mental thing as well. You know, it's about pushing yourself a bit beyond what you're used to doing. You know, lots of cricketers hate running. Owen Morgan hates running, you know, but luckily as a batsman, he doesn't have to do much running, does he? So
just keeps belting into the crowd.
he's just belting into the crowd. So Ollie has got to do some hard yards on, you know, plodding the streets or the hills around where he lives and just get stronger and fitter.
Mm. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? You know, you're a player like that who he sort of come into it quite late, hasn't he? Making his debut at the age of 27, having a lot of success, and he's got some skill, and his record so far has been excellent over the test matches he's played. He's taking his wickets at about 20, which is, you know, extremely good, isn't it? And so, you know, there's something to work with. But I suppose what the frustration with the England management would be if he didn't really build on that now, because you have got a great opportunity in the England team, and what a fantastic thrill that is. You know, it's the sort of summit, you know, it's the peak of your career, isn't it? You're in the
but it's got to be something you want to do. It's got to be something that inside you. And look at someone like Stuart Broad, the reason why he's so, and Jimmy, the reason why they're so successful is A, they keep themselves incredibly fit, and B, they keep trying to improve. Broad goes away and figures out things with his action and tries different deliveries and all that in the nets, and often you'll see him bowling at a stump in an indoor school or something. You have to do that, obviously, lots of bowling. One other thing that I found actually quite useful, and I think Ollie would also find useful, is swimming. Because, again, it's boring, but it builds up your body, your core, your back, your shoulders, and that's where he's got, you know, some suspect areas. So, you know, lots of, which is great for your heart as well. If you plough up and down a pool, you know, for 40 minutes or something, that's really good. And it's not, it's a stress-free training as well. So I would suggest he has to do some of that. But again, it's about whether he's got the desire to or not.
Well, the message has gone out to him. I think that's pretty clear, both sort of internally now, externally, the fact that it's been, you know, vocalised in the media. And so I suppose the focus would now be on him, whether he's able to do what the England management want him to do. Right, so we're moving towards the end of this test series. It's unlikely to go to a fifth day. It might well end on the third day, more likely to end on the fourth day. But what we are going to end on is that story, Oz. I haven't forgotten that story you were going to tell. Go on.
Well, it was your favourite county, Gloucestershire. It was a one-day Sunday match at Cheltenham, the great Cheltenham Festival, which was always a tremendous time because it's a great pitch for a start and a lovely surroundings, but also there's marquees all around the ground, and they you know, they have lots of entertainment and drinks and nice food and everything like that. And we turned up for this Sunday league game near the end of the season, sort of, I think it was August sort of time, and we were out of the potential, you know, Sunday league. And it was raining, and we were actually all thinking, oh great, we've had 5 or 6 days on the road here, quite a tough few county matches, day off, it's raining. But better than that, they've got all these marquees around the ground. So we turn up at about 12:30 for a 2 o'clock start, teeming down with rain. We get stuck into the smoked salmon and the champagne and the Pimm's and stuff like that, just in small quantities, in the marquees, the sponsors' marquees. Lovely, there's no chance of play. It's absolutely teeming down with rain. You know, we're just going to have a lovely afternoon enjoying ourselves, really, with a few friends and some sponsors and stuff. And at 4:30, after about 2.5 hours of quite enjoying ourselves, the rain stopped. And because Cheltenham was on a bit of a slope, all the water had run off. And within about 45 minutes, the umpires had had an inspection, came out and said, we're playing a 10-over game.
And?
So we had to play a 10-over game. Well, I mean, I couldn't hit the cut strip.
Well, that was no different.
I think I bowled two overs for about 24. And I remember actually John Embry could barely bowl as well. And he was normally incredibly accurate. And no, it was just embarrassing. It was like a pub game. It was probably very entertaining for the spectators, but the standard of cricket was absolutely appalling. And then we retired back to the bar in slightly with our tails between our legs, but it was fun while it lasted.
Well, the Ashes hasn't descended to that level yet. You're still plenty to play for on the last couple of days of this Test match. I don't know, professional sport. I think that's the only story. Because I've heard plenty of stories like that of those sorts of, you know, Sunday League festival matches where people think the game's off and then suddenly it's on again. You have to grab your whites and your boots.
Maybe England will be better off actually playing with a few drinks tomorrow when they're chasing 240 to win.
240. That's optimistic. We'll see. Anyway, we'll see what happens on the third day and we'll review it for you this time tomorrow. Goodbye for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.